What do you mean?
Okay.
Like, wait, what?
For some reason.
No, wait a minute. That can't be true.
What's up, guys? Welcome back. This is season 3, episode 5 of your favorite minicast, Talkative FM, your voice of reason. Before anything else, go hit the subscribe button on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anywhere you stream your podcast and leave a 5-star review, please, for the algorithm. Also, go check out my new Instagram and TikTok account at talkative.fm. I am your host, JD, and let's jump right into the minicast. Today's topic, African diaspora and the Dutch African immigrants. And can they relate? Or not? So, what's up with this topic? Who cares? Well, I care. And also, I have an opinion. And I have a strong urge to share my views and see how far I think we have come since I entered this koude-kikkerlandje called the Netherlands. Before I start, let's rewind and start with a short history lesson. Disclaimer, I'm not a historian, but here we go. For those who don't know, there are Africans in the Netherlands, but there are also African diaspora in the Netherlands, and those are called the Surinamese people. I like to call them the Afro-Surinamese people. They were the inhabitants of Suriname, or still are, obviously, and they are descended from enslaved Africans brought by the Dutch to work on sugar plantations back in the day. Many of them escaped, though, and most of them, some of them were even free, but they escaped the plantations and formed independent settlements together. So they were known as the Maroons and the Bushinekwe, but they maintained most of their culture and their language, and nowadays they are usually split into ethnic subgroups called Creoles and Maroons. Most of the enslaved people back in the day were imported to Suriname, came from West Central Africa, from Ghana, a lot came from Benin, the Bight of Biafra, Sierra Leone, and the total number of enslaved people was estimated at 220,000. Anywho, fast forward, the Dutch people gave their land back because they were like, okay, slavery needs to stop, obviously. And, Suriname became a slave colony. Okay, that sounded kind of dramatic and also could be partially not true. Please don't quote me, and all the people that are offended, don't be offended. Sorry. I will promise to have a season where I interview all the greatest minds, all the ambitious people, and one of them will definitely be an historian about the Surinamese and the Afro-Caribbean diaspora, and they will enlighten us with the actual factual information. But basically, there were two camps. There was a camp of Africans that were on the continent and decided to come here, whether through, fleeing from a war or as a refugee, or maybe they were coming in as expats to work, or they're coming in, for different reasons. And then there's this other camp that came here through, being a colony being a colony of the Netherlands or in some of the other countries, of course. And those were two groups of people who looked the same, who also in some occasions acted the same, but were not actually the same. which was a weird dynamic back in the day. You know, I came into the Netherlands when in 1995, I was 4. And growing up with my mom and with my siblings, we did hear from all the like first generation African parents that there was always this stereotype and this negative view of people that are from the Caribbean, whether it's from Jamaica, whether it's from, you know, you name it, St. Lucia, Curacao, Suriname. And they always put them in one bunch. I was like, back then, I didn't know better. You know, like first generation African parents, the only thing that they know about the Caribbean is basically Bob Marley. And Bob Marley smokes weed and has dreadlocks and is preaching peace, you know? But the only thing they remember is like, oh, dreadlocks, it looks unkept. It's not neat. Oh, smoking weed, you know, it's drugs. They're from the streets and all that kind of stuff. So there was always this typical stereotype from first generation African parents in general, where they were telling their kids that they shouldn't mingle and that they should stay away and focus on your studies and focus on school and, you know, be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer, because those are, you know, the best things you can do in life, and start a family and all these kind of things. And it created a divide, obviously. I myself grew up in a very predominantly white neighborhood, so I can't really speak to this, but I know from, you know, being in different panels like Adam Talk Show, from, you know, created by Afro Dutch Powerhouse, or any other panel that I've been on where they were always discussing this African diaspora and African continental African divide, where I was always part of the discussion to share my own view. And so I did come across some people that grew up in Amsterdam, for example, or The Hague or Rotterdam, like these major cities in the Netherlands. And their experience was always also like, oh, you are different. You guys cook weird food. You smell like fish. You know, hence the so-called curse word called boku. Boku is kind of their slang for this kind of certain type of fish. I believe it's stockfish, because I think Nigerians make it as well. Stockfish. And that kind of fish really smells really bad when you cook it, even though it's quite delicious. And then, you know, there was this divide when people were younger and stuff like that. But after some time, that clearly changed. And like, look at now, like 2023, your Afrobeats and everything is so intertwined and mingled, and everybody's loving each other, and it's brotherhood and it's sisterhood and it's everything. But it gradually grew into this, what it is right now. But, you know, we can say that we have improved, and we have improved. But if you think about it, in some ways, there's still a difference. I mean, if I look at some of the, you know, first generation African parents that are still living in the Netherlands, and they are calling to, you know, Dutch organizations like the Belastingdienst or Het UWV, or, you know, you name it, the telecom provider or one of their, you know, hiring committees or something like that. Anything related to this higher up organizational instances, they always tend to like speak Dutch, eh? In the best they can. And it's always with this African accent, which I can't really explain other than repeating what I won't. And I noticed that the people that are on the phone, the service providers, the, how you call it, you know, the call agents, whatever, that are picking up the phone, they always have trouble understanding them. Like, oh, what are you saying? We don't understand. Oh, this is your accent. Or a woman, you need to go here and here. Or, you know, feeding them wrong information 9 times out of 10. But when you look at the first generation Suriname people, Caribbean people, and all of the above, they also have an accent. Like, they have this strong, you know, Afro-Surinamese accent, but they still speak Dutch fluently. I mean, it's understandable, but for some reason, that accent is accepted and understood, and and I'm referring to Dutch people here, they understand that, but the African, the continental African first generation parents that didn't have that were very difficult to understand and had to repeat all the time, which was a very strange divide for me when growing up as a kid and seeing that around me and with aunties and uncles and everything like that. And I feel like nowadays it's still the same thing. Like if you have an accent, a very strong accent at that, people rarely understand you, which is weird. I have the privilege of not having that issue because, you know, I grew up learning how to speak the language as a refugee. So we were forced to speak Dutch very well until we were put into a regular primary school. But other than that, I don't know. It's just an interesting dynamic to see, and I'm happy to see that it's progressing and it's getting better as we speak. But a lot of people didn't even know that this divide even existed and why it exists and why, you know, you mean you look like each other, you have a lot of the same humor, and most of the things are the same, but still there is a divide in cultural things. You know, continental Africans prefer the traditional way of, you know, getting married, being in a long-standing relationship and everything like that. And in the Caribbean, the Afro-Caribbean diaspora, so to say, they're not so much focused on that. They're more focused on, you know, having a beautiful life, being peaceful, working hard, hustling, all that kind of things. So it's a bit of a difficult topic to discuss in 10 minutes, but that is my two cents on this topic. And, you know, thank you for listening, and see you in the next episode. Bye.